Hello and welcome. I'm Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner.
And I'm Shea Pataja, the co-host of
New Retirement Radio,
the podcast.
This is New Retirement Radio with the team from Prout Financial Design.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management, Inc., member FINRA, SIPC.
Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and opinions given are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their financial needs with a financial professional.
Prout Financial is back from Traverse City, Prout Financial Design. And joining us right now, the team led by Certified Financial Planner, Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
It's great to be here, Ron. Thank you so much. On Thursday, September 5. September 5, we're all ready, are we? Are we ready, Clash?
Yes.
Let's go.
I'm not ready. I'm not ready for September.
Shay and Heidi Thompson joining us. Shay Pataja, Heidi Thompson.
Good morning.
Our trio, good morning. Today we're talking about 401ks. Why, how, and when. The importance of saving. 401ks. The number of Fidelity 401k accounts with balances over $1 million jumped recently to 196,000 of their 30 million participants, 0.7%.
Well, I would have guessed higher. I don't know why I would have, but
yeah,
what do you think?
196,000.
Yeah,
yeah, and that is an increase of 17% from a year ago. 17% increase. Obviously, part of that due to the stock market. Part of that due to the fact that they were actually saving. So the key to making any of this work is that you actually save some money. Yeah. It's not where it's allocated. It's not how it's allocated. It's not the fact that you move from job to job. It's actually it's that you actually save some money. That was a great point made some time ago by a well-known, I'll just say this, a well-known budget person. He said, you know, it's not due to the allocation. He said, that's what I was guessing it was going to be. Why do people accumulate these funds? It's because they actually save money.
So step one is actually putting money in.
Actually putting money in.
It's almost like Shay's advice. Basic advice,
you know,
5 years
would only listen to
before
you,
came true.
Yes.
Everyone laughs at me for keeping it simple, but I'm just
saying.
Step one, put money in the account.
And what's interesting about having put money in, it increases your interest.
Mm-hmm.
No pun intended.
Literally.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
Because actually having made the investment, you say, oh my gosh, it just got to 5,000. This got to 10. It's got to 20. Maybe we should pay a little more attention to that, dear, should we? Yes. Who are you talking to? Well, you know, the people who come in and, you know, they have their points and I do actually do listen to them. That might be a great thing to have done to where you're actually creating then the interest. The interest is not going to be that great when you're starting at zero. I get that.
Mm-mm.
There are certain things they're advising people to do and I understand those do make sense. Some of the first choices can be very important. But as those monies grow, then naturally your interest in it and your allocation concerns should and hopefully do grow. And we're going to talk about how to allocate, what to look at, the fact that some of the negatives as well as the positives in regards to these 401ks. Because in the end, what is it all about? It's all about the income.
Me. So I'm sorry.
Yes. That too, Ron. Thank you.
Yes, you are correct. Tell him what he won.
The Dow Jones, by the way, the Dow Jones. I know you look at S&P, but you can look at that. But Dow Jones Index at this moment, 14 after 10 on Thursday the 5th, is up 431 points.
Oh, that's a nice bounce in the right direction.
Who would have guessed?
I got a Shea stat.
The prognosticators at the beginning of this month were talking about the huge possible negatives in September. And Shea's got some stats that relate to that. Usually they are dead wrong.
S&P's up 43, by the way.
Okay.
So as of December 2018, 10 Wall Street strategists predicted where the yield on the 10-year T-note would be as of December of 2019. However, the yield on the 10-year note has fallen by 1.5% as of Friday's close of 8/30/2019.
Okay, so they had predicted that it would rise from the current rate of, what was it at that point?
It doesn't list it.
I thought it did.
I don't think it does.
Who predicted it?
Strategists, 10 strategists. Strategists. They were wrong, all 10. Yeah. So there you go.
All forecasted an increase. Mm-hmm. It was at 2.68% at that point. Now it's at 1.5%.
So there you have it.
Is that good or bad?
Well, it's at a historic low at this point. And in essence, what it's causing is it could cause a flight from our dollar because interest rates... I don't want to get into that. That's a very deep subject. We talked about internally about discussing that subject, and we thought we'd have to wake everyone up who might be listening. But anyway, it could cause weakness in our own dollar because that yield has gone down to such a point that our dollar may not be as competitive as it once was in terms of a holding. And in some respects, it simply points to the fact that we are looking most likely at some sort of a global currency going down the road here. Our currency currently is about 98 years as a global currency, the dollar, and we're getting long in the tooth, according to history, going back to the 1400s, whenever there's been a global currency. So, yes, that's part of things.
I didn't know they had currency in the 1400s.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
Trading beaver pelts or something.
Portugal was big.
Yeah.
Yep.
Portuguese coins of the 1400s.
Yes.
All right.
So the number of Fidelity 401k accounts, about 196,000. And for those who want to get there, the first thing is you have to start. The way to accumulate wealth is you must save. Now, does that mean you have to save $1,000 a month? No. You might be able to get away with $50 per pay. Start small. Something with which you know that you can continue in terms of having success in the long term. And the two major choices I consider is putting some money into the Roth option. First, find out, do I have a Roth option within the 401k? Many who are nearing retirement might be surprised. Oh, my gosh, I didn't even know that we had a Roth option here at work. You may decide you want to put more money in the Roth now to top off, if you will, your savings. For those who are employed at all, even over age 70 and a half, you can still put money in a 401k if you're employed at that firm. And if you're still employed, work 1 hour per year, you do not have to take a required minimum distribution from that account. If RMDs are a big problem for you, it may be a reason you decide to keep that 401k at that firm. Even if you're going to work part-time as a consultant, a highly, highly paid consultant,
yes.
Ron.
Yeah, well, yes.
Yes.
See? Yes.
There you have it.
Is there some stat that, I don't know how they'd measure it, but a good percentage of people who are wealthy is caused by inheritance. It's caused by, I guess I'd say inheritance. So when you talk about saving for wealth for your retirement, part of it, though, is for the next generation. You can really substantially help out the next generation by saving as soon as you can. Not everybody can, but if you can, you can think of it in those terms.
Yes, and in terms of passing it on, if there is Roth money, that can be some of the best money to pass on. Now, they'll have to take required minimum distributions, children of, obviously, you know, parents who are non-spouse beneficiaries, do have to take required minimum distributions, but those, if it's in a Roth, are non-taxable. So that can be still a great way to have accumulated wealth. Of course, the best thing is to have lived to age 95 to 100, you know, so you don't have to worry about them spending any of that money down.
Can you, if you get an RMD as a kid, as an offspring, can you turn around, take some of that, and put it into your IRA?
It's a great question.
Thank you.
You have compensation, Ron, if you have a job... Then you could use that money in essence. You have to take it out and pay the tax on it. But they could use that money to save, either for their own education. They may decide to put it in their own 529 plan or a Roth account. The Roth is non-taxable for when they want to take it out for higher education. So even at age, 10, yeah, he or she's got a job delivering papers or whatever it is. You could take that those funds, let's say it's $500 a year, and put it into a Roth. It's crazy.
And especially, like you were talking about 401k Roth options, for the younger people who are starting out in their 401k, it's so powerful to put it in that Roth because it has so many decades to grow over time. And that growth is tax exempt. And that's a lot of returns year after year that you could...
that can be built up on. Even if it's in a pre-tax account, it grows tax-deferred until you take it out. Now, one of the caveats made up in these articles or put out in within these articles is you have to leave it in there until you're 59 and a half. And I say, no. Not if you're let go from the company. So if you're let go from the company, you can take it out. Most 401ks allow you to take it out at age 55. If you're employed by the local city 457 plan, it's at age 50 if you're no longer working for the city. You can take it out without penalty. It is taxable, but no penalty. Nice to know in terms of an emergency fund that you might need to draw money out. Crazy stuff here.
Crazy stuff.
And you just thought it was just a plain old 401k.
I just thought, exactly.
It's not.
There's so much to it.
So much.
It's amazing what can be accumulated. It's amazing how much can be taxable. But it's also incredible how this can serve as a foundation to help you in several other areas to launch and diversify what could be a pyramid of wealth.
I
should write a book.
Speculation yes. Question. The Roth 401 is, what do you call it, tax-deferred?
Well, tax it grows tax-deferred, yeah. Tax-free in
tax-free,
essence.
Yeah, tax-free. But along comes another, say, 15 years, and you have these younger generation is running the show, making the decisions. We're deep, deep in debt. They want more money so they can give people free bicycles. And where do they get it?
I'm sorry.
Why don't we just tax those old people's Roth 401s? Let's just change the law. Could they do that? Could they change the law?
Yes.
Oh.
They can always change the law, Ron.
Be nice to the millennials, Ron.
Right.
You know, isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
They could always change the law. They could change the law on the pre-tax sums, and they could change the law on the after-tax sums. So the accounts that you deducted or were able to deduct, one of the proposals is that they want a tax accumulation on stocks. So let's say you bought IBM back when it was 10, and it's 200 now. Well, they're talking about imposing a tax on the accumulation even though you didn't sell that IBM stock.
Wow.
Ouch. Well, that's talk right now. It probably won't be signed into law. What's interesting about any of this, it still points to the value of diversification. Once you've accumulated some funds there, you may decide to accumulate it outside of a 401k as well. The fact that you've accumulated it there, again, what I would use it as is a base of the pyramid. How do I use that to expand, if you will, my horizons in terms of our investments? What's taxable, what's not, what's growing tax-free, tax-deferred, all those different tax-advantaged ways and investments that we can talk about. Let's take a break, shall we?
Gold, by the way, diversification. You mentioned this last week. Gold is just... climbing a big hill here on the graph.
It has, and that part of that is this lowering of the interest rates and the concern over our dollar and the global debt. Global debt now is at historic highs. Central banks are adding to gold at historic rates. Mm. Their purchases have been amazing to watch. So Heidi's got some interesting things on interesting points on how to pay off student loans quickly.
Right. And this, I thought this would be a great topic to mention just because recently my daughter got her first real job, like you say, after you get out of school. And so she's putting all these pieces together. And She made me very proud because she came to me and asked me to help her with a budget.
The B word.
Like, okay. All this financial advising is rubbing off on her. But, you know, she has some student loans. So we had a discussion on those. And I thought, hey, you know, if it's not you having the student loans, maybe your child or even your grandchildren are getting to that point where they're getting out of school and getting ready to pay off those student loans. So how about some tips on how to help them pay those off a little bit more quickly?
Yeah, for those kids who are not going back to school but have to face reality.
Yep, it's time to pay that money back.
It's here. The time has come.
So the first tip is to get on a budget. My daughter and I sat down and we were trying to figure out, you know, approximately how much is this going to cost and rent and parking and all these different expenses. So get yourself on a budget because that's going to help you with your discipline and being able to meet those expenses. And actually knowing what you have to pay for will help you when you are on those impulse buys. Well, I think I'll just go buy a new car. Well, let's think about it first. So the second tip is maybe you'd like to pay more than the minimum payment. Maybe add $50 or start whittling away at that principal balance, because when you're starting out, a lot of your payment is going to be paying off the interest on that money. So the faster you can pay off that principal, the less interest you'll pay over time. So that's another idea. Maybe start at 20% or something like that. Start whittling down that principal.
If you get a raise, maybe consider upping your payment to your student loans or something.
Okay. Generally on the smallest balance first, correct?
Yep. I think that's tip number five there, Shay.
Oh, well. Okay. I wasn't even looking.
Okay. Make some financial sacrifices is tip number three. So think about the things that you've been waiting till you get your new job and you want to do. Take a step back and think about, you know, maybe you don't need cable. If you're just doing Netflix and stuff like that, you're working a lot more. Maybe you don't need that cable subscription.
Maybe you don't need your phone. I'm just kidding.
No. That was mean. That was
I think that's
funny.
Like
that's
a necessity, right? For
your spoken like phone. A true baby boomer.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Are you sure you need that phone there? Yeah.
Try telling teenagers you didn't get a cell phone till you're 24. They look at you like
you're
ancient.
From another planet.
Yes.
You don't even get it. You
I was thinking more like maybe get a coffee maker and make your own coffee, but
yeah.
Wow.
Whoa.
That's mean.
You know,
huh?
Something like that. But that can help save money. And you could use that to pay off your student loan. There's a concept called the snowball concept. And what you do, you can pay off student loans with this concept. So you take your smallest loan and you pay the minimums on everything else. And you put that extra money that you're going to use to pay off your loan towards that one loan. And you pay that one off. And then you take the next biggest. The key is, once you pay one off, you take what you were paying on that first one and add it to the next one. And this will get you going. You'll feel a sense of accomplishment starting right off the bat if you can get some of those smaller loans paid off right away. And one key that Dennis and I had talked about is celebrate when you've pay off a loan. You know, it's an accomplishment, so do something nice for yourself or get something that you've been waiting to get for yourself, so that will help incentivize you to do more and to keep going and to push through to pay off the rest of those loans.
Even though that may seem a bit I think it's a great idea to do that. Whether it's $2,000 or $3,000 or whatever it is. So if you're paying, let's say, a total of $100 a month on one debt, and then once you paid it off, you celebrate going out or whatever, then take that $100 that you're paying on the first one and just add it on to the second. It's amazing how that works. Jill and I used that, 20, 25 years ago. We listened to a debt payoff program that was on cassette tape.
Was it Larry Burkett?
It was on cassette. No, it was not.
Cassette tape.
Cassette tape.
Cassette
on
tape.
Paying down debt.
Wow.
And I listened to that thing religiously. And it was amazing to me how well that worked. So it can work for anyone. looking to pay off debts early that has accumulated just too much.
Obviously,
there's some other points, and credit cards especially, other points to take advantage of as a part of that. But that's a great start of a strategy.
Yeah.
You bet.
So then we go to tip five that Shay brought up earlier. You might want to use some of a raise or maybe some of your tax refund and make a payment on that principal to help whittle down that balance over time. And then tip six is to increase your income, maybe with a side hustle. There's so many things you can do now just with your own schedule. You can do Uber. You can be an Uber driver. I know my daughter, one thing she does, she's a shopper at like Target and Meijer, where people have called in and asked for an order. You go and do the shopping and then you deliver it. You could do that on your own schedule, maybe one day or 2 days a month. Use that money to help make that payment or to whittle down that principal. So with a little investment of time, you could really make an impact. Tip seven is don't bank on student loan forgiveness. There's a lot of talk about that. Mm. There's some programs out there, but don't plan that that's going to happen. Pushing that problem out to the future to deal with later is not always going to work out for you. And we don't know what's going to happen or how it's going to be handled. You may not qualify. You may hear about great programs, but you may not qualify. So don't bank on that. Start making active decisions today to work on those problems. And then the last tip is stay motivated. You know, the more that you put your mind to this early on, the faster you'll pay this off. I know personally, it took me till I was in my mid-30s before mm-hmm. I paid my student loans
me
off.
Me too. Yeah.
You too.
Yeah.
So, you know, it seems like a long time. It is a long time, but you can get through it and get on the other side. And the quicker you get that off your plate, the quicker you can use your money for stuff that you want for yourself. So.
Great points.
The worst thing. Go ahead.
One other thing I listened to years ago was don't necessarily try to catch up with your parents and what they've accumulated in their homes. Think about the stuff that you really need. It's okay to have a secondhand couch or a secondhand chair or a phone that's not totally updated. It's okay to have those things. And some people actually relish that sort of thing. Yeah, you know, it's an antique, but we still use it. It works. That the second part, I think, is extremely important is, for the most part, don't rescue your children. Let them work through those issues. Those may be some of the best lessons they ever have of having to work through those things and living through it. Oh, gee, and how are we going to do this? Sometimes those extra thoughts or ways that they might raise money were as a result of you not rescuing your child, your son or daughter, letting them get through that. So, yes.
Excellent advice. And your daughter was, smart enough. You said she came to you and she actually wants a budget.
Right.
So she's got that step out of the way.
Because she wants to make sure she's stepping off on a good foot and not get behind very quickly, because I think she's seen some of her friends go through that. So getting a hold of it. And just the knowledge, that budget is so helpful to know what you can spend on stuff instead of just guessing and, I'm sure it'll be fine.
So. Yes, great advice. So the ways to increase or maximize your 401k selections or options, start with the plan document first. See if the company you're working with is actually making a match to the contributions that you make. That is, as though you're getting 100% return. If you put in 3% in the company that you're working for puts in a 3% match, that is 100% return on your investment. That's how you can make the 401k really exponentially better in terms of its accumulation. All right? Number two, look at this. Don't overlook your beneficiary designation form. Can you believe it? They actually mentioned this too.
Awesome.
So important.
So we've talked about that once or twice.
A couple times, yeah.
Remember the beneficiary form. In many cases, the people have divorced and are remarried. They're talking about a situation here, what an advisor is saying. But their 401k would go to their ex if they died. Keep those updated. You may be surprised. Check them once in a while. What's my primary beneficiary and what is the contingent beneficiary in my 401k and IRA accounts? Who gets the money if I pass away? who gets the money in this case if both of us pass away. Step three, complete your plan enrollment form, the enrollment form that you'll get to get the plan started. Now, sometimes you may have to wait a year or so to get started with a new company if you're newly employed. So take a look at that. How long before I can enroll? What is the first date on which I can enroll? And then fill out the form. Get started with it. And start with an amount that may seem conservative to you, so you can continue it even if you have a change in your financial situation.
And Dennis, if you have to wait that year, you could go ahead and open your own IRA for that year that you're not in the plan.
A great point. So you could start your own IRA or Roth IRA if you wanted to on a monthly basis. Many times these Roth IRA or IRA accounts at mutual funds will allow you to invest $50 or $100 a month. If you're goal-orientated and you want to continue that accumulation, consider putting it into your IRA or Roth. You generally have more freedom anyway in terms of those accounts and drawing them out, whether it's for education or whatever else. Don't overlook your beneficiary. Number three, complete the enrollment form, and then take a look then next at the pre-tax or Roth accounts. Keep in mind, you may want to not deduct the amounts going in so that the money comes out tax-free. That is the Roth option. Many plans allow you to do that where you can say, I want 50% of my funds going in on a monthly basis to go to the Roth side and 50% to the pre-tax so I can deduct 50% of what went in and not deduct the other 50%. And there is no income limitation on using the Roth and the 401k. That's a major benefit. The Roth outside of the 401k has income limitations. The Roth inside does not. There are no income limitations.
So a good thing to do would be if you don't check with your employer today and ask if you have the Roth 401k option.
Have a Roth option within the 401k account. And again, even for those approaching retirement, this may be the way to put the frosting on the cake, if you will, and a giant chocolate cake, as it were, okay? Just to put a fine point to that. Mm-hmm. So contact your 401k plan manager to find out what your options are, generally the HR department, and then take a look next if there's automatic rebalancing, generally a great idea because we're going to rebalance then from those accounts that earn the most to those that did not, and it tends to enhance performance over time. And step four, learn about your investment options. Many do not spend enough time at this and don't understand the impact of diversification. International, small cap, even S&P 500 type account funds. You may be surprised at what's available within your account and who's managing those funds. If you get a good advisor, which we do all the time, we take a look at clients' 401k account and count that as a part of their situation. How do we enhance what you're doing there as well? We include that in and all their advice that we give to them as to allocations. Should you be adding more money to those accounts? Where should that be allocated to? We don't charge extra for that service in advising clients on their 401ks.
Yeah, just looking at that overall portfolio strategy. So looking at what you're invested in your 401k as well as maybe your outside investments.
Exactly right.
Right.
You bet. Where's everything at? And are you taking maximum advantage of those accounts that you have elsewhere too?
Well, that was step five, wasn't it?
That was step four.
That was four. Okay. Four is a long step.
A and B, so I didn't necessarily. Now, the last one is pick the right funds, which we kind of alluded to. But picking the right funds is also a huge positive in terms of total returns over the long term.
Invest your money and pick the right funds.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Invest it properly. Looking at the proper diversification and then picking the right funds, too. Many would be surprised saying, well, all my money's in the target fund, as a for instance. That seems so simple for me. Shouldn't I just take maximum advantage of that? Well, possibly. But you might be surprised at the limit of diversification within that particular account. That's why it's important to pick the right funds as well.
Step six, don't pick the wrong funds.
I like the companies that auto-enroll their employees. Like, you're all, you start contributing right away, and you have to opt out of that. I think that's pretty smart.
It's interesting, Heidi, you were saying your daughter was auto-enrolled as well, automatically.
That's right. They start them out in the plan. It's just part of the hiring onboarding process of a new employee. So you actually have to opt out if you don't want to be in it. But I thought that was great because it just reminds people. And sometime when you're getting your first job, you don't realize all the different decisions and choices you're checking on that intake list. And it's great to start off saving right off the bat.
I wonder if they do or if they should, like in high school at least, let students know, and things have changed now. You can't count on Social Security. You, once you start working, are responsible. And it's way out there. You don't want to think about it when you're 18 or 20. But at least let student-aged people know if saving for your retirement is a given. You've got to do that and start early. Otherwise, but then again, you might freak them out. And they're already afraid of climate change and everything else. And so maybe it'd scare them.
Well, I think it should be a requirement. Surprise. Yeah. It should be a requirement to have a semester of basic financial planning concepts for students going into the real world, even going into college. Because these things, the responsibility shift has been dramatic, and it is a major part of life. I remember having a class on actually writing, well, it was bookkeeping, but a part of that class was actually writing out a check. Well, that's almost unheard of today. But having a class on basic financial planning concepts today would be incredible.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
Thanks so much for listening. You can find us online at proutfinancialdesign.com. That's P-R-O-U-T, financialdesign.com. Also, you'll be able to find us on iTunes and SoundCloud.